Hello everyone, and welcome to episode 31 of season 11 of Movie Reminiscence, the Daily Podcast, where we curry our way through the 2001 award-winning HBO miniseries Band of Brothers, 5 minutes at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again is Father David Mowry. Welcome back to the show, Father David.
Thanks for having me back. This ditch I've been cowering in outside of Keratin has been very comfortable over the weekend.
Even with all those bullets flying above you?
Well, I just try to block those out. I try not to think about it.
Okay. That's fair. That's a fair way to look at it. Episode 31 begins with Winters continuing to try and get the men moving, and ends with Lip getting thrown back by the blast as the other men begin to take cover. So we ended things on Friday with the Easy Company starting to move into Carentan. And, you know, as they're running down the pathway to Carentan, they start getting shot at. Welsh and Luz are the only two that run forward. Everyone else run to the sides. And we had Winters starting to try to motivate everyone to get up. At this point, no one's getting up. And so this episode begins with Winters running in the middle of patched road, however you want to refer to it, completely uncovered by anything, just screaming, "Move up, man, go, move out, move out, get yourself out of the ditch." And, you know, nobody seems to be listening to him. You know, these guys are all just cowering to the side and, you know, not sure what they're supposed to be doing. And then, you know, he sees Blythe and he runs over to him and goes, "Get yourself out of the ditch. We have men getting killed out there, Blythe." And I've mentioned this many times and I will mention it once again. I love the fact that Winters knows all of his men. You know,
yes.
It's hard enough for us to recognize any of them because they're all wearing helmets and full gear, and you know, we haven't spent as much time with them as Winters did, but still. But
he has taken the time to know all their names. And he's had this moment with Blythe in the forest before, so we know that when he's shouting at Blythe, he's not doing so from any sense of frustration or maliciousness. He's doing so because he authentically wants Blythe to get up and move. I find it hilarious that Winters takes off his helmet in order to encourage the men to go, making himself even more exposed, putting himself in even greater danger in order to motivate everyone to get up and go.
Right. And we even see that he starts like kicking Blythe to get him to move.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a good way to do it.
Just whatever works.
That's right. You want to kick guys, just go ahead. And no, it's not Blythe. He starts kicking the other guys because he's, as you said, right, holding his helmet and he's kicking guys.
Yeah, we're not going to kick Blythe. No, we're not our precious boy Blythe. No.
That's right.
Blythe is going to have a hard enough time. He doesn't need Winters kicking him.
That's very true. But Winters is just, he goes, "Move, get yourselves out of here. Go, go." You know, and the men do start getting up at this point, you know. And then
which they need to. Otherwise, those machine gun nests have done their job. They've pinned down the Americans and kept them from coming into the town. They're only going to be able to capture the town by going right into the teeth of that fire.
Exactly. And then we have, you know, soldiers in the tall grass, with heavy machine guns. When they go, "Spotter, upstairs window, left," and they start shooting at the building in order to give the men of Easy a little bit more cover. And then we're back with Winters, who just says, "Get yourselves out of these trenches." And you know, he's doing all he can to try and motivate these guys to get out of there. And then we finally see that a number of them make it into the town, and like one of them makes it through a fence and gets to the side.
Mm-hmm.
A second one starts running through and just gets shot right in the middle of this little alleyway as he's walking in.
We have some very Saving Private Ryan kind of sequences here showing the brutality of war. And it's very unromanticized, all these deaths. You know, it's just bodies dropping like sacks of flour. And there's no lingering on people's faces. There is no swell of the music. There's no time given to any of the men in Easy Company to mourn these losses. It's very realistic, very in the moment, trying to capture that sense of being in the midst of the firefight and not being able to take the time for what would be shocking moments otherwise, because you're under fire and you've got Winters yelling in your ear to move forward and take that town.
Yeah.
So it's a real shocking juxtaposition. You know, in most movies or other pieces of media, you know, death is usually treated with more pathos. And here, the injuries and deaths are much more, I don't know, matter of fact. It's just like, yep, this is what's happening. And now we have, this is a new problem that we have to deal with rather than this is the end of the world as we know it.
Right. Exactly. And then we see another soldier make it to the other side of the street, and he's behind some cover at the edge of the building with what he's doing. And then one of the guys just screams, "Incoming!" We see the Germans are shooting from one of the windows at all the men, and then Lip shows up with his squad. They're continuing along with everybody else, and Lip looks around the side of the building, and we see that they start shooting a little bit at his position, and he's trying to figure out what it is. Lip is looking out of the side of the building as they're getting ready to start shooting at him, and one of the men gets close to Lip and starts telling him, and he goes, "There's one in the right upper wing," and as he says this, he gets shot, right in the middle. Just again showing us that even in the middle of this type of situation with a conversation, men are just getting shot left and right. There's no way of knowing who's going to be able to make it through and who's not.
Yeah,
that type of thing. And then
I find it interesting at this point where they're trying to clear out this machine gun nest from the cafe, and we get a couple of shots as our Easy Company soldiers are trying to line up shots and trying to eliminate the soldiers that are in there. Whether it's the sniper that's up on the stairs that we see in a little bit, or the men that are inside the German position, we don't see the Germans' faces.
Nope.
Ever.
Nope, not at all.
As realistic as the deaths are for Easy Company, and we don't know all the men who die, we only have so many characters that we have to keep track of, but for the Germans, we don't see hardly any of their humanity in this episode. They're very carefully shot so that we don't see their eyes, we don't see a lot of distinguishing features, which I found, I don't know, just a little distracting, I suppose, just given how visceral and realistic the rest of the episode is. There's a particular shot where this really came home to me, which we'll talk about in a bit, but I just find it interesting how unrealistically the shots are of the German soldiers, that we're just focusing them only as adversaries, only as obstacles to overcome. And they are the adversary. They are the enemy. They're shot in almost kind of like a stormtrooper from Star Wars kind of way. It almost seems like one of them is wearing a full gas mask as he's behind one of the machine guns inside the cafe position.
Right. Yeah. No, and I mean, Saving Private Ryan did the similar thing where it showed, they let us get familiar with the American soldiers, and the German soldiers are just stereotypes, and that's it. They sometimes give us the perspective of the Germans, but we never see the men themselves with what they're doing, because again, I guess that's not the focus here. The focus is on what Easy Company is doing. And maybe they don't want us to be sympathetic at all with the adversaries, because why do you need to be? Could be from that perspective. Mm-hmm. I don't know, but so they continue with trying to clear out the Germans that are shooting on the side here, after this guy gets shot right next to Lip, this ground medic, and then they say upper flank. Oh shit! Sniper! And they go take his lower left, and we get to see that they're trying to take out this sniper, and You know, they're not doing it very effectively, I guess you could say. But at this point, you know, we have Shifty, who's caught in like he's trapped in a particular area all by himself.
Yeah.
And he looks over and he sees you know, the guy across the way throws a grenade, which explodes in front of where the German is, but doesn't manage to really to take out the German in the building itself because of the explosion. But you know, it does give them a few seconds of reprieve, and then this guy gets shot in the head, and we see that he just falls down. And they're not really sure how they're going to be dealing with this, you know, and they're trying to figure out how they're going to get Shifty to be able to take out that sniper, because Shifty is their, you know, their marksman. And at this point, they're able to, you know, when the sniper takes out the other guy across the street, so it gives Shifty a few seconds that he's able to you know, to finally take him down.
In a firefight, it always seems to come down to those moment-by-moment decisions to take advantage of just a few seconds, a few moments of distraction from your adversary in order to take that opportunity to eliminate a tactical threat.
Correct.
And to do so from around the corner where Shifty can't see what he's aiming at. Of course, we get a little cheat because we get to see from the viewpoint of the audience where the sniper is, so that when Shifty comes around the corner and is able to eliminate him, or we can believe that shot. But, you know, to make that shot, that's to turn around the corner, find your target, draw down on him, and then be able to take that shot before anyone else is able to fire on him. I mean, there's no wonder that Shifty is their marksman. That's some really good shooting.
Right. I mean, the story behind Shifty is that, you know, he grew up in a very rural area, and he and his father used to always go hunting, and, you know, they would hunt with rifles, not with shotguns, and he got to be very good at it. So it makes sense that they would have him in this, you know, doing this particular job to be able to try and take care of, you know, thing. And then we see that Shifty then moves and takes out the other German who's shooting a machine gun in the window. You know, so he knows what he's doing when it comes to all of this. So that works well. And Welsh then tries to find a way that they have another guy who now has Shifty basically pinned down again. And Welshton takes out a grenade, turns to Luz next to him and goes, "We need some covering fire. Ready, Luz?" He goes, "Okay, I'm out." And Shifty is still pinned down in his area, goes, "Oh, shit." Then Welsh does something very interesting. He runs across the street holding a grenade, pulls the pin, and throws it in the window, and manages to take out the German that's there. So it's
this is the heroism moment I was talking about on Friday. It's very risky, but only possible because there's several platoons providing covering fire for this moment of almost, I would say, it's not almost, this moment of reckless heroism.
Yeah.
To eliminate the machine gun's nest. And only possible because Shifty has drawn the machine gunner's fire. But let's have a moment of silence for the real heroes of this minute, those poor chickens in that chicken coop behind Shifty.
Yeah.
They have that big explosion of feathers as they're turned into chicken nuggets. Those three French hens never stood a chance.
No, they did not. But it is nice that they add that in there. You know, tell us
we have to honor the sacrifice
what the men will be eating
all the French night. Fighters yeah. During this conflict.
The French chickens. Is that what you're referring to?
Well, I mean, these French chickens. They're so brave.
Yes, they are.
Yeah.
And at this point, the you know, Luz runs across the street to go try and help take out some of the men, and, you know, try and help Shifty actually get out of where he's been pinned down. And they a few of the guys actually bump into each other as they come across a German soldier. They shoot him and they fall down. But right before that, did you happen to notice when they cross the street that there's just a piano just sitting in the middle of the street?
Yes, thank you. I wanted to talk about the piano. So, pianos don't just end up in the middle of the street. So, I want to know who put that piano there and why. Was it the French when they were trying to keep the Germans from taking Caratan? Did the Germans move it out of some burnt hulk of a little tavern in order to have a anyway, a little impromptu square dance out in the village streets? Or were they trying to set up defensive positions before the Americans came in? Because we happen to know something about the strategy the Germans are taking here in Keraton. But why is that piano doing out in the middle of the street? It's a terrible defensive position. The Germans aren't even taking advantage of it.
And
it's a perfectly good place for a machine gun nest.
That's true. And they could also be playing, songs from the 30s and 40s.
No, it's bad for morale. Just have a piano and no one playing it. They should be playing the national anthem to rouse their German spirits. And then once the Germans are dead, the Americans should come in and play Stars and Stripes Forever on it in order to provide a little musical backing to their taking of Keraton.
Exactly. Seriously. But it still worked. Nothing you can do about that. But, back in Saving Private Ryan, when they're in the middle of the town, we see, like, a grandfather clock just in the middle of the town. So maybe it was someone was trying to loot something and just got shot, and then it just stayed where it was.
Maybe.
I can't think of any other reason for it. So, yeah, the men are all then trying to go, building to building, try to take out the Germans that are there, and they see that Shifty is now okay. And then we hear Winter says, "Garnier, clear that section on the right." And he goes, "Hey, with me." And they start moving down. And then someone screams to Shifty, "You okay, Shifty?" And Shifty gives him the thumbs up. And they go, "We gotta take that warehouse." And they go, "Shifty, hammer those windows." And then Shifty starts shooting at all the glass windows on the top, which obviously is very helpful also to keep everyone down and also, make sure that nobody's up there. And at this point, let's go, move. And then Welsh goes, "Tipper, take Leibgott, start clearing those buildings." "Right." And then he screams to Compton, who's across the street, and goes, "Two at a time." So they basically want to let two guys run across the street at a time. And, two guys take off. And then Buck goes, "Second two, go, go." And then they start pointing out and they go, "Houses on the right." And, we see that the various men are going into different positions, trying to find ways to take out all of these buildings. I mean, that's one of the problems with having to clean out a town like this, where you do have to go, door to door. Basically, to make sure that everything is is done there. And then we see Luz and Hubler that are there, and they take a grenade and throw it through the window. And they enter the building right after the explosion.
A very clean, tactical precision.
Yes, definitely. And I love how he kicks in the door as he's moving in. And then we see from Tipper where he just blew a hole in the wall of a building. And he and Leibgott just run off of that. And you see a dazed German come out.
Where was that when they were doing the machine gun nest? Why weren't we firing the rockets at the machine gunners in the cafe? That seems like that would have been the right time for that kind of ordinance.
Apparently, they wanted to wait with the bazooka. Maybe Tipper hadn't made it into the town yet. And they were waiting for him to get there.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe, I suppose.
And then we see a dazed German come out of the hole that they just blew in the building, and he comes across one of the guys, and I believe it's Hubler, who takes out he takes out a pistol and just shoots the guy. Right on the spot.
This was the shot that I was talking about before. I had forgotten this shot from my first time watching it. When I rewatched it now, I was somewhat taken aback by the violence of this shot, the starkness of the shooting, where you have the two figures, and in the rest of the action of this movie, it's very clear that the Americans are under fire and they're returning fire, and it's the chaos of battle. And in this, it feels much more like an execution than anything. You're this German soldier has stumbled out dazed. He's gripping his rifle, but you know, I'm not going to fault the American for not taking the time for it. But just it's not so much what the soldier does, but the way it's framed for us. There's it feels very Hollywood, this shot. Just the side on and the big puff of blood and viscera that comes out of the guy's chest after he is shot. It was some of the other shots, they're very bloody and visceral, but there was something about this one that just, I don't know, it kind of rubbed me the wrong way. Maybe I'm just getting overly sensitive in my old age.
Well, I think this goes back to what we were talking about on Friday, these men are not saints. And, there are things that happened that, when you look back and you say, oh, and, the men of Easy, they were these completely moral with everything that they did. Maybe this is a way for them to show us that, okay, not everything is completely black and white. You're in the middle of battle. Right now there isn't, I guess they're in the cleaning up mode at this point, but still the adrenaline's flowing. And you're mad at mm-hmm. At the enemy who has just, killed a whole bunch of your friends. So I can understand that in the heat of battle, something like this could happen. I don't think the men of Easy are thinking, okay, how can we take people prisoner? It's like, okay, German soldier.
I agree.
He deserves to die. That's the way that my thinking takes me from their perspective. And I think that they just wanted to.
Yeah, he's an enemy combatant.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. And then the shot goes back to Luz, who is getting ready to go into another building with Hubler. And Hubler's a little concerned, and he goes, smash! Grenade! Luz, come on! Luz! Come on! And for some reason, and I'm very curious if this is real or not, Les just has an instinct that he shouldn't be throwing a grenade into this particular building. And I don't know why he has that perspective, but then he just kicks in the door and we see a family that is huddled there trying to keep themselves safe.
My research was that this happened not in Keratin, but at some other point for Easy Company. They didn't throw a grenade into a building during some kind of operation, and it turned out that there was a family or the civilians in there that would have died otherwise. And the producers and directors of the series liked that story so much they wanted to include it, and they included it here in Keratin, which the editing of it is really interesting, coming off of that execution style shot in the street to then this moment of reservation and checking before going into blow away this particular house. And as for why he makes that decision, there's nothing in the text of the episode to explain why. I could imagine maybe his intuition was like, oh, there haven't been any shots that have come from this building, and we don't need to throw a grenade in here. Let's check it first.
Right. That's true. Again, I don't have an answer as to why it is. I mean, in the book itself, I just was looking and wasn't able to find any reference to a family just by doing a quick search. It is very possible that it is something that took place in a different spot, within the story. I just wasn't able to come across it right now. What it is. And again, Luz is able to save this family that's for obvious reasons cowering, a fear that everything is going on around them.
Yeah.
No question about that. And Luz is obviously very happy from the perspective that he didn't throw the grenade in. And then the shot changes, and we see Lipton basically climbing up a flight of stairs on the outside of a building, trying to figure out, you know, trying to get to where they're, one of these shooters is coming from, and he throws a grenade in, and the explosion goes off, and then he looks in, and he sees that you know, everything's fine, and then he hears a huge explosion, and looks out, and I gotta say, this is a great shot. You know, they're able to give us, you know, Lipton on outside stairway, and he just sees this whole bunch of debris,
yeah,
just completely go up all around them, and he screams, "Oh shit!"
That is one heck of an ordnance. I mean, if they are firing ordnance that can throw rubble, what is that, 40, 50 feet into the air?
Yeah.
Boy, our boys are in
That's
some
right.
trouble.
Unless it hit the,
That's some
unless it
hit
the top of a building. You know, we can we tell?
Oh, maybe.
Exactly,
okay, maybe.
If it came from the ground? I don't know if you could tell if it came from the ground. No, again.
It looks like it's coming from behind one of the
houses. First of all, we only hear the explosion, and we don't see the initial explosion. We just see the debris. But you're right. It is behind those houses.
But maybe it did hit a house. I think that would make more
Probably.
Sense. If it's exploding from the roof of a house, that would explain the spray. Because it's coming from the street. Oh, man.
That's right. And Lip realizes what's going on, and he screams, because they got a zeroed. Spread it out. Go. Get the hell out of there. They got a zeroed. Get out of there. Go. Get the hell out of the street. Move now. Let's go. And, you know, as this is all happening, he's starting to go back down the stairs, trying to get there to help the guys that are, you know, that are all trapped around there, which again is a.
So I hope that warehouse is cleared out.
It's definitely great showing how much Lipton cares for the men, that he's running out and putting himself in danger to try to, you know, get everyone into some type of safety with everything that's going on. Buck shows up, and, you know, he's moving the men in the other direction, trying to get them out of harm's way. And we see one of the guys is carrying another guy on his shoulders as he's trying to, you know, he's carrying one of the injured guys out of there, trying to get out. And then the building explodes, and we, you know, you'd think that the guy's going to fall, but
that's
an amazing shot.
Oh, man. How much time do they have to take to set up pyrotechnics for that? I mean, just the technical difficulty of that shot and the timing of it. Because, boy, resetting that.
And also getting the shot perfectly, you know, with the, you know, these actors or stuntmen, I'm assuming, are running across the, you know, mm-hmm. and that they don't get hit. Because you do see that the building is basically crumbling behind them. Just falling apart.
Yeah. Well, this is a major turning point in the storyline of the battle. This is a big moment where things are swinging back in the Germans' direction, because they've got this fire superiority, these mortars raining down on Easy Company. And so now what had been before, like, oh, we're starting to see Easy Company take some houses, clearing them out, clearing out the machine guns' nests. Now all of a sudden there's a lot more panic and chaos, and we're not seeing Easy Company in control of the situation. They're going to have to do something to reclaim it, and it opens up, well, we'll see in the next couple of seconds here what happens as the mortar shells continue
right.
to come
exactly.
down.
Well, we'll probably see more of it tomorrow, but yeah. But then, you know, we see another group of soldiers showing up, and they start moving into position, and we see that the third soldier that they're showing is Blythe. We haven't seen him in a little while. And Blythe shows up with all of them, and he turns around the corner and, you know, puts himself in a position where he's safe. And, you know, he just doesn't know what to do at this point. And then he gets up, and then he sinks back. He like turns backwards and then falls to the ground with his back against the wall. And he has this very strange look on his face as to what's going on. And again,
a thousand yards stare.
And it tells us once again that, you know, there's something about what Blythe is experiencing and seeing here that's slightly out of the ordinary.
Yeah, we're clearly being set up to notice Blythe having a hard time.
Exactly.
And he can't quite see his way out of his predicament right now.
And again, he's obviously panicking, but he's panicking in a it's his way of panicking, because again, as he told us beforehand, you know, he was hiding for most days. He's doing all he can to try to obviously keep himself alive, which is the number one goal of what these men are all trying to do here, for obvious reasons. And
he's to his credit, he's following his training. He's in line with the other member of Easy Company, and they're staging around that corner to make sure that they're not all blasted. If there's fire coming from around that corner, they're taking that pause before going around it to make sure that not all of them just walk right into the line of fire. So there, it's clear that Blythe has absorbed some of the training. Now he has to take a moment to kind of brace himself before he goes around that next corner, but that's when something else happens to him. So it's not as though Blythe is completely out of his element or has no capacities for what's going on around him. There's something else that is holding him back right now. I would say he's doing better than I would do in this situation. Even
well, you've had a different type of training in life.
Yeah, I was not in basic training when I was 19 years old. I was watching Band of Brothers. Not
no, you were in basic training for a different type of army.
Yes, right.
At this point, we're back with the rest of the men as they're trying to figure out what to do, and we see that we come across a medic that's trying to help one of the soldiers, and we see that he covers the soldier's body with his own body, you know, during the explosion, which is a great thing to show, you know, the selflessness of this medic, who, you know, is willing to put himself in more danger in order to protect the person he's trying to currently save. And I mean, the way that he's covering his body just makes it look like similar to what Wade did in Saving Private Ryan, you know, where they were trying to do all they can to protect the, you know, whoever they're trying to currently save. So I like the way they show that.
Well, yeah. The medic is not, the medic doesn't want more work. The medic has a hard enough time of it. And if more shrapnel it causes more damage to his man, then that's going to make his life even harder. But there's also, yeah, that selflessness, you know, that medic is there in order to heal and to save. So it's good to see all of those instincts coming into play.
Yeah, for sure. And at this point, we see another one of men from Easy that's just standing there, and we see that there's an explosion right below him, and his leg gets cut off with that explosion. Again, very graphic, but also a great special effects shot.
And it's so visceral.
After this guy's leg gets blown off, which again is an amazing special effects shot of the way that they do this. Granted, very graphic, but they're trying to show us the dangers of everything that's going on here. And then we see Bull sees it from the window and runs out and goes down onto the street, you know, making sure to cover himself, and he grabs this guy who's been wounded and lifts him up onto his back and is able to carry him out of here. You know, it's an interesting thing. I mean, anyone who's seen Saving Private Ryan, you know, you have the beginning scene where, you know, a guy has his arm blown off and continues to, you know, and picks up his arm and continues forward. You know, but here Bull doesn't even think to take the guy's foot. You know, maybe they could reattach it. I don't know. But they're never going to find that limb again at this point.
No, I don't think there was any hope of reattaching that. And Bull, he's not a doctor. He's just a good man. And he sees his brother in trouble. He's going to go and pick him up and carry him to safety so he doesn't lose any more
That's very true. And at this point, continues, and we see that again, these guys are all trying to figure out how to go, and someone runs past a German rocket propelled I don't even know what you would want to call it. It's a some sort of machine gun device that can shoot a grenade, I guess you can say. And we see that someone runs by them, and so now we know that they're right there, and they're aiming to shoot something. And
yeah, I would hope that the real soldiers who fought in Keratin were more observant than the ones in Band of Brothers, because boy, it's just kind of right there and has what looks to be a pretty wide open shot to that fellow who's standing on the corner directing traffic.
Exactly. Well, no, it's that is Lip. He's trying to get everyone out of the way. So he's screaming, move, get off the street. And he goes, go, move now. And then they shoot off the rocket, and the rocket lands just, I don't know, like 20 feet in front of Lip, and Lip goes flying backwards, and hits the building right behind him. And we see a whole bunch of the other guys jump for cover at the exact same time. And as that's all mm-hmm. happening, that's where this 5-minute segment ends. So yeah, we've gotten a lot of action over the last 5 minutes.
I'll say, my goodness. Well, and somehow the houses of Keratin are still standing.
Yes, that is true. That is very true. So, did you have anything else you wanted to add about this particular 5-minute segment?
No, nothing else.
All right. Excellent. So, today's segment is a trivia game. We are going to test your World War II movie trivia knowledge.
Okay.
So, once again, I will randomly choose trivia questions from a whole bunch of World War II movies, and we will see which ones you're familiar with and which ones less. Hopefully you know more than less. That's the important thing. So, let's spin the wheel.
We'll find out.
I'm being optimistic for you. I want you to be able to answer these questions. The idea here is not to stump you. The idea is to for you to show off the plethora of knowledge that you have. So let's
all right, well,
and see what we
here's to showing off.
No. That you don't have to try and show off. Okay. What 1981 German film set entirely inside a submarine follows the tense and often grim life of a U-boat crew?
Is it Das Boot?
Yes, it is. Very good.
Aha, all right.
Excellent. Nicely done. So let's spin the wheel for the next question. And around and around and around the wheel goes. And let's see what question we get this time. What 2023 movie that won an Oscar for Best Foreign Language Film is all about the life of the Commandant of Auschwitz and his family?
That is Zone of Interest.
Correct.
Oh boy, 2 for 2.
There you go. It's a great start. Let's continue that. Let's spin the wheel for the next one. Okay, the 2016 biographical drama Anthropoid is about the true story of the assassination of which high-ranking Nazi official in Prague?
This one I don't know. Is it... I'm going to say it's about assassinating Hitler.
No, it's about...
I don't know who else to say.
Okay, no, it was about the assassination of Reinhard Heydrich, who was...
And that was my second guess, of course. Yeah,
of course. He was one of the people that that dealt with the concentration camps. Okay. All right, you're still 2 for 3. You're still doing well. You know. All you need is one more to be able to have a winning choice here.
Okay.
Why not, right? In the 1959 movie Never So Few, directed by John Sturgis, who stars in the film besides Frank Sinatra and Peter Lawford?
Frank Sinatra, Peter Lawford, and who else would be in there?
Think John Sturgis. Who do you think would first get noticed in this movie from a John Sturgis World War II movie?
That is a good question. Do you want to tell me the answer?
That would later be in a famous John Sturgis World War II movie. He would be the main star 4 years later in 1963.
See, this is where I'm going to admit that I don't know who John Sturgis is.
Okay, well, let's put it this way.
I don't recognize that name right off the bat.
You and I have talked about a movie of his from 1963, and the main star of that movie is the person I'm looking for.
Oh, of course, it's The Great Escape, so we're talking about Donald Pleasance.
Close?
No, I'm kidding. It's Steve McQueen.
Steve McQueen, very good. Yes. I mean, you and I did talk about Donald Pleasance all 5 days. I do remember that you gave me a whole bunch of Donald Pleasance movies that that I needed to check out, that even after 5 years, some of them I have and some of them I haven't.
Some of them were more worth checking out than others.
Yes, that's very true. All right, so here, this is the final question, which will tip the scales. Let's see which way it tips it. And around and around and around the wheel goes. Okay, the 2012 movie by George Lucas, Red Tails, is about what?
That is about the African-American fighter pilots during World War One.
That is not World War Two.
World War Two. I thought it was World War One.
No, these are only questions.
I was off by a whole.
These are only World War Two questions.
Oh, I got distracted thinking about Donald Pleasance.
Okay, that's right. Yeah, so Red Tails is about the Tuskegee pilots fighting in
the Tuskegee Airmen. Yeah.
Yes, fighting in Italy during World War Two. All right, nicely done. You see, you get a winning score. So there you go. All right,
huzzah!
Exactly. And now we will play the daily game of name that World War II movie. So let's see what movie you get here. You know, maybe it'll be one of the ones that we just talked about. That is possible. So let's spin the wheel and see what we get. Round and around and around the wheel goes. It's a movie from 1961, which is all about the way that the Allies decided to try all of the Nazi criminals that they had captured.
You're working really hard not to say the word Nuremberg.
Yes, I am.
So I know Nuremberg is part of the title. Is it the Nuremberg Trials? Is that the name of the movie? I can't remember.
So
Nuremberg came out.
Nuremberg is in the word in the title, yes. But do you know anyone who do you remember anyone who stars in this movie?
I do not.
Okay, so it's Judgment at Nuremberg.
Judgment at Nuremberg. Right.
And it's with Spencer Tracy, Montgomery Clift. So it's definitely got a star-studded cast. So, yes. Okay. See, that there's something that you should go check out.
Absolutely.
Burt Lancaster is also in it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, no, it's got Richard Widmark is in it. Marlene Dietrich. Maximilian Schell is also in it.
Oh, wow.
Julie Garland.
Oh.
And you also get a small part by William Shatner. And Werner Klimperer was also in it. You know who that is, don't you?
It's not ringing a bell.
He was the bad guy in Hogan's Heroes. He played Colonel Klink. Okay. Doesn't sound like you know what Hogan's Heroes is.
I don't really know Hogan's Heroes either. No. Sorry. That's a generational divide, I think. I'm just on the other side of knowing Hogan's Heroes.
Okay. That is completely fair. All right. So would you like to once again tell people where they can find you?
They can find me on not knowing World War II movies on my website at fatherdavidmowry.com, where I did talk about one World War II movie in a previous Movies by Minutes project, looking at the best years of our lives, which is a great movie about what happens when the soldiers came home from World War II. So I hosted 10 minutes of that, sharing hosting responsibilities with other members of the Movies by Minutes community. So please feel free to check that out.
Finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie by Minute. You can find me on Facebook, find me on Twitter, find me on Instagram, find me on my website, movieby-minute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movieby-minute@movieby-minute.net. So until tomorrow, Kurahee!
Kurahee!